Thanks again for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 here on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. In the studio with me is Brian Forshner. He's the author of the new book, Cold Serial, The Jack the Strangler Murders. It's about five girls who were raped and strangled in Dayton, Ohio, back in the early 20th century. And Brian found this true crime story on his way somewhere else and is here to talk about that. Brian, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Glad to be here.
Well, so I say you were on your way to somewhere else. You were actually doing genealogy research, right?
Yeah, I was doing genealogy, and actually I was teaching criminology at the University of Dayton in those days, took a lunch break at Woodland Cemetery across the street, went through a card catalog, which most of your viewers probably don't know what those are, but found a Mary Forshner, had no idea who she was. She wasn't on my genealogical list, and to make a long story short, I found out she was my grandfather's sister, and I grew up with my grandfather. He never said anything about a 15-year-old girl. And then, of course, the further I dug, I found out that she was raped and murdered, and I kept finding more girls.
So, I mean, after you started looking into Mary Forshner, I mean, where did it go? Because there were five girls who, over a certain stretch of years, were raped and strangled, and the police force back in the day tried all they could, but I have to laugh, Brian, because, you know, in these days of CSI, when I read about these crime scenes in your book, Cold Serial, and all the spectators who came in and they're walking everywhere, and the first girl you're talking about, they actually took the body home and bathed it before they even called the police. And it was, how could you get any police work done in those days?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, before, the 1909, there was, you could tell the difference between human blood and animal blood. Fingerprinting was being experimented in big cities like New York. There was no DNA. There was, the city of Dayton had one detective. City of about 70,000 people, detective, you know, as a science was pretty much catch them in the act, beat it out of them, or tons of circumstantial evidence, kind of a circumstantial logic, which we applied in this book, which they would have applied in those days. It's like, is there enough circumstantial evidence that this person clearly did it?
Well, I think you said, you know, one detective, and I recall, I think, reading a number in the book, there were only like 46 police officers for 70,000 people.
Yeah, it was, that was a problem. Actually, the legacy, all these girls left some interesting legacies, and the first girl, basically, the Dayton Police Department of History Foundation found the link when I shared the information, because it triggered them to go to the best police department in the country in those days, which was in Detroit. And they ended up hiring more police officers, more detectives, hired a permanent chief of police. So there were some interesting legacies. Actually, another legacy was after all of these girls, the areas of the town they lived in was annexed because people wanted lighting and police protection.
I'm speaking with Brian Forshner. He's the author of Cold Serial, The Jack the Strangler Murders, about a series of murders in Dayton, Ohio, back in the early 20th century. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. And okay, so you started with Mary because you were looking for genealogy and family matters. Where and how did your path continue from there? Who was the next girl you discovered that might be linked, and how did that all fit together, Brian?
In the midst of the coroner's inquest for Mary, the coroner got a phone call stating they found another body. So they stopped the inquest. He ran out the door, stole a horse and buggy, and ran downtown and found another body. And at this point, those were the last two of five, and the New York Times had already called these murders, because it got national attention for a lot of different reasons, but the New York Times called them the Jack the Strangler Murders, because Jack the Ripper was in everybody's mind, and Cincinnati had Jack the Nabber and Jack the Peeper and my favorite Jack the Pincher, whose M.O. we won't go into here. But and then they started linking these together, and Dayton's notoriety was such that, I mean, the Wright brothers were in Paris selling airplanes, and they were coming home that very within months. NCR in Dayton in those days was threatening to leave Dayton, and cities like Cincinnati were interested. There was 100 cities bidding on them, so. So what in the Wright brothers, actually, in the Wright brothers' book, it's mentioned in the Bishop Wright talks about it. He lived a few doors down from the first murder. And the crowds would have been swarming through his neighborhood looking for this girl. So there was a lot of political pressure in those days for Dayton's to cure its reputation. And there's an interesting cartoon that appeared in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, which I show people when I talk, or it's on my website, which a lot of this digital, hundreds of digital photos are there. But it shows a Dayton tree with the list of the girls on it and a newspaper boy that says other cities throwing mud at it. And underneath it, it said in Dayton, when a man's daughter comes home late, he goes looking for her body. Mm. And the art, and Dayton reprinted that, and under it, it said, what can we do about this? Because they were just taking, the Wright brothers had kind of put it on the map, and this was dragging them down. And if you go into newspaper archives, you will find hundreds of articles on these girls from all over the country and in Europe.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it was one, the great article I found in a newspaper that the French were calling Dayton the Paris of the Midwest. Because when the Wright brothers were over there, whatever they said was, they thought women in this country, particularly Dayton, went to New York to shop in the morning, came home for dinner, and went out to theater in the afternoon. So it was a battle. So consequently, these murders ended up getting swept under the rug. There was a crime reporter several years later that wrote, he wrote a column called The Crime Reporter's Notebook. He would go back over and reminisce. And that was like 20 years later. And I picked up a name and I went back and sure enough, things started falling into place.
And I wanted to ask, you know, because you looked at all these cases and you mentioned that you were teaching criminology at the time and began to use some of today's practices to look at what they did then. What was the biggest mistake that the police made when exploring these cases, besides the fact that it took a while for them to really link them all together?
Well, you know, part of it is in training. In you're trained to look for certain things, and detective work as a science. I mean, even the word detective police was a term that was coined at the turn of the century, so they really weren't trained to look at that. However, the police tended to know what was going on, but it was the politicians, as always, who were interfering in their work. They knew that they had the guy. But, for example, the prosecutor is the chief policing officer, and he either wouldn't prosecute, or he would push it under the rug, or he was up for election, or those kinds of things. So the police at the, you know, I can't really badmouth the police because they were, they knew what was going on, and they had their suspects, and they felt in the end that they had their man, even though he was not convicted on this offense.
Very interesting stories for each of these women. And really, this is as much true crime as it is almost sociological, because you're looking at the way these people were living back there at the turn of the century in Dayton, Ohio. And, well, not the Wild West. Life was still pretty hard back then.
Oh, it was, and of course, one of the girls was from Cincinnati, and there was a lot of yellow journalism was rampant, and a lot of rivalry between Cincinnati and Dayton papers, because their detectives would search for suspects, and so just a lot of, I know they tried, Dayton accused them of trying to start race riots in Dayton by saying that a black man had done it, and Dayton retorted by calling it the Yellow Post a journalistic atrocity. lynchings were, you know, of course, I think up to that point, Ohio had 26 lynchings, about 10 white, 16 blacks. And it wasn't that they found people in the street. They would go to the jail and drag them out of the jail, and the police couldn't stop them. So there was, and lynching was always mentioned at these murders. And mm-hmm. didn't always happen. It didn't happen in any of these particular murders, but there was that element of Wild West there. It wouldn't be till about 1910 when such novel inventions, like they stole the concept of the police dog from the French and fingerprinting from the Italians. And so things started coming together. Teddy Roosevelt started using, when he was police commissioner, he started using that. He actually founded the FBI in about 1908, and things started coming together. But up at that point, since I had Dayton area, it was pretty wild.
Brian Forshner, his book is Cold Serial, The Jack the Strangler Murders. You can learn more about it on our website, wvxu.org. And there's a lot of conversation between the players in your book, Cold Cereal. And I imagine that you had quite a bit of research to do to go back to recreate these conversations. But some of them are very telling. The conversations themselves and what people were concerned about. And you really bring to life especially the families of the victims when they're looking at it. And the first story in your book, Cold Cereal, about Ada and a victim who was found in an outhouse, is just horrific. How was this to write? I mean, as I was reading the descriptions, it was kind of churning my stomach, and I can imagine as you were doing all your research and reading these accounts that even the most hardened and heartened soul would have to feel a little bit. What was it like when you were recreating the stories of these victims?
All I wanted to do was tell their stories, and I didn't want to write a book that my granddaughter couldn't read.
But you did.
But I did, because there's only so much you could cover. But I would say it was writing the dialogue was very tough. Ada's case was very difficult, but I wanted the reader to get a picture, which I hope you did, of who was this girl. Mm-hmm. And who were these girls? And you were able to do that by picking up snippets from hundreds, which I have digital copies that I'm putting on my website, of articles of different crime reporters, kind of like today, who interviewed and took this angle, took that angle. So you were able to pick up things like with Ada, who she was quite the little talker. She was a scholar in her class. And, you know, she was her daughter. She was the youngest child in the family and the 11-year-old, so you can make some assumptions that she had to be the apple of her daddy's eye, mm-hmm. But there were things that you would pick up that people covered, and you started piecing them together and wrapping some narrative around it. And I think when you read the book, you will get to know the girls, and each one of them had a pretty distinct personality, including my great aunt. You see a picture of her. The picture that was covered nationally in there had five sub-pictures, all with a different hat. This girl loved clothes.
Right.
And
her garnet ring, too.
Was the key. Her garnet ring, when her mother tried to kiss her in the casket and found something missing, that led me to say, you know, where have I read this before? And so the classic serial killer thing of the collection of items and anniversary dates and the boldness and brazenness and all those issues started coming together, and what started out as a genealogical research and transitioned through maybe a series of short stories ended up being wound together by the finding of an individual who had been a predator in the community for over 10 years.
And not only in Dayton, but you speculate here in Cincinnati, too.
Oh, he would be my prime suspect in the Cumminsville, the four Cumminsville murders that took place in 1904, because he was tied to the railroad. Railroad went right by. These girls were found right there, right out in front of Spring Grove Cemetery, rapes and murders. So, and the story ends up in Madisonville.
Yes.
Where this person's family lives. So, you know, it's, again, the circumstantial stuff. And some, you know, and I had somebody say, that can't be right. And I said, write a book.
There you go. Well, I did notice, Brian, that the book is dedicated to the victims of the Jack Strangler.
Right.
Each of the girls is named. Why do you think it's important to tell their stories?
You know, telling stories has always been a way of doing justice. Telling you know what happened years ago, and we're kind of doing justice for these girls, and because in those days the shame sometimes family, you know, for example, if there was a rape involved, there was nothing for the one a key potential key witness who just moved back to Germany. There was so much victim blaming, and I'm not sure we're over all of that on sexual crimes. I think we have a long ways to go. Just two weeks ago, Jewish Community Center in Dayton, we took we did a bus tour with an actor, historian, and myself, and reenacted the last days of those girls. And it's pretty touching. Matter of fact, we ended up with a couple of buses. But the one thing that struck me, and those sites are still there, a couple of the homes are there, is that the exact spot of where which I did not know, there was a mansion there, and their body was found on next door in the barn. Well, where that barn is today is a prayer garden. Unbeknownst to anyone there.
Wow.
And we were just shocked. And actually, at this time of year, there's all sorts of lighting there. And there was a little reluctance in people having christening that side of the murder site. But it was very, it was just touching. So we, I figured we dedicated to those girls. And here you and I are talking, and nobody has talked about these girls in 110 years. Nobody cared to talk about it. No monuments, no foundations, that sort of thing. So.
Well, thank you for sharing their stories, Brian.
Great. Great.
Cold Serial, the Jack the Strangler murders that took place in Dayton at the turn of the 20th century. A book by Brian Forschner, True Crime and More. You can learn about Cold Serial at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.